Good evening and welcome to what we hope will be the first of many GPAC's lectures. We're privileged to have with us tonight Rivka Kamenetsky Rosenbaum. Welcome to her husband Shalom in the back. And I think your father's someplace outside. He's coming in, I heard. So welcome to all the rest of the guests who are here. A special thank you really to Judy Berman, who put together the program and worked very hard with Nechama Price, who's director of the GPAC program, to make sure that we could have this series, which I think is special for us, and I think also special for GPATS, but it's really, this is what the future looks like, so to speak, and this is what the present looks like. So we'd like to thank the sponsors, Zev and Judy Berman, Mark and Sarah Beanstock, Avram and Sharon Blumenthal, and Harry and Chavir Peters. And if you want to, if you'd like to sponsor any future installment, please contact Judy Berman or the office. The next installment will be April 5th. And the GPAT will be Sarah Robinson, which you'll get a bio, I guess, in the mail. There was a longer bio, which I understand was sent in the first flyer. I have the last flyer, so it's a shorter bio. Just one word about GPATs and myself at Stern College. So I have the benefit of being at Stern College and listening to the Beis Medrash. And I will say that when I was moved to the sixth floor, which was in the Beis Medrash, it took me a while to get used to like the Ron and the Rush and female voices, but I got used to it. And it's interesting, so then you listen not to the voices, but to the words being said, and you realize that they're really learning. It's really a phenomenon. Today I discovered for the first time that shiur is actually 2 hours long. I didn't realize that. Rabbi Gedalia Berger, who gives, I don't know if it's the main shiur, but is it longer than 2 hours?
It could be,
okay. So that's the true style of Rosh Yeshiva. You go as long as you want, and the students have to hold cup. So, kol hakavod. We really appreciate the notion that the YU has put forward, and it's been going on for quite a few years already, and many successes, and many of the GPAT graduates are in a variety of places and roles in schools, and some of them in schools, communities, and so on, teaching to scholars, etc. Regarding Rivka herself, she's in the first year of Yeshiva University's GPAT's graduate program in Advanced Talmudic Studies. She was a Beis Medrash fellow in SAR High School last year, where she taught Talmud and Tanakh. She comes originally from Teaneck. She studied in high school in Mayanot and Migdal Oz for a year and a half in Israel, of the, let's say, Rav Lichtenstein's daughter's yeshiva, so to speak. And then at Stern College, she lives in Washington Heights with her husband Shalom, who I assume will drive her home afterwards. Right, okay, good. That's very good. It's always good when husband and wives go home together at the end of the lecture, unless you want to have ice cream along the way. The topic this evening is unless you're Fleshik, okay. It's a pre-Purim lecture, Destroying Amalek, Contemporary Dilemma versus Historical Mitzvah. We thank you very much for living with us, Rivka. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, everyone. We're going to be talking about Mishloach Manu. I know it's different than what it says on the schedule, but Mishloach Manu is more fun than Amalek. So let's take a whack at it. In Esther Perek Tet, we start out in Pasuk Chaf here. Ve'echtov Mordechai ad hadzavarim ha'ila ve'yishlach sfarim el kol yehudim asher b'chol medinot ha'melech achashverosh. So here, Mordechai is going to be, is being metakin Purim, and he's sending out to all of the Jews what Purim is going to be. Let's skip to Pasuk Chaf Bet towards the end. This month is gonna turn us very happy. So here we have a list of, in addition to Megillah, which we know is one of our mitzvot, a list of three mitzvot of Purim. Now let's take a look at the mitzvah that we're focusing on tonight. Mishloach Manot. Here in the Shulchan Aruch, we read, Chayav l'shloach l'chaveiro shtei manot basar o shal minei ochlem she'amar u'mashloach manot ish l'rayayhu. To fulfill Mishloach Manot, you have to send two meal offerings, meals of meat, or two different types of food. And we get it from the pasuk that we just read. Shtei Manot ish li'ish echad. You send it to one person. B'chol hamar be'lishloach l'rayim mishubach. And if you send more, then that's great. Ve'im ein lo, and if he doesn't have enough for both the mishloach manot and for seuda, machlif im chaveiro, zeh sholeach lezeh seuda to, bezeh sholeach lezeh seuda to, kedei lekayim u'mishloach manot ish l'rei ehu. So what happens if you don't have enough money to make a seuda and to give mishloach manot? You take your seuda meal and you give it to your friend, and your friend takes his seuda meal and he gives it to you. And that is how you fulfill this mitzvah. Now let's look at the Ramah. B'yesh l'shloach manot b'yom v'lo b'layla. We should give mishloach manot during the day of Purim. V'im sholeach manot l'rei ehu, v'hu eino rotza l'kablam, o mochal lo yatza. So let's say you go to your friend's house and you really want to give them mishloach manot, but you bake something really, really fattening and they're like, no, I don't want to take it. I'm on a diet. If they really refuse to take it, but you really want to give it to them, the Rama says you're still yotze, you still fulfill your obligation of mishloach manot. Beisha chayavet b'manatanot lev yonim u'mishloach manot ki'ish, and a woman has the same obligation as a man does in this mitzvah of mishloach manot. Beisha tishlach leisha v'ish leish, and a woman, and in a good tznius way, a woman should be giving mishloach manot to women, and a man should be giving to other men. Aval lo behafach shelo yavo ish l'shloach la'amana v'yavo lidei safik kiddushin aval b'matanot la'avyonim ein l'chosh. So we could spend a whole share on this, why maybe sending mishloach manot to the opposite gender would be possibly seen as kiddushin, but not matanot la'avyonim, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. Great. So now let's take a pin on that. Let's put a pin on that. Maybe we'll revisit what we learned in the Shulchan Aruch, and let's take a step back. And let's go to the list that Mordechai gave us earlier. We have Yimei Mishteh V'Simcha, and what's that? That's having a Seuda. We're Jews. We love having Seudas. We do it on every Yontif, basically. So that doesn't look so much different. And now let's skip, and let's look at Matanot L'Avyonim. Tzedakah. We have a mitzvah to give tzedakah all the time. We're even told that it's good to give tzedakah before holidays. We have Pesach coming up a month later, and we have this halacha of maos chlitim. So mishloach manot kind of seems like the odd man out here. What's it doing here? We have nothing else like it on any of our other holidays. Why on earth? Hi, it's a boy. Why on earth did Mordechai tell us to give these shalach manos? What is it? So we're gonna look tonight. Oh, I'm so sorry. We're gonna also look at what the Mishnah Brura says before when we said that a man that if let's say we went a friend went over to another friend's house and they said, oh, I'm on a diet, I don't want your mishloach manot. The Rama had told us that. I'm sorry, the Rama had told us that you're Yotze. The Mishnah Brura says, brings the Pri Chadash and the Chasam Sofer, and he says that, no, you're not Yotze in that case. All right, so now let's go back to our question of what is Mishloach Manot doing? What's the point of it? Why was Mordechai attacking it? Let's look at the Truman Hadeshin in source 4, which is Rabbi Yisrael Isserlein, who lived from 1390 to 1460. And he asks, and basically the Truman Hadeshin, I'm pretty sure he invented his own questions. No one actually asked him. B'nei Adam ha-sholchim l'chavereihem b'purim chalukim v'sedinim u'kahai gavna. So if someone sends their friends on Purim these non-food items, Yotzim yedei mishloach manot olav. Does this person who's sending non-food items to his friend, is he yotze? Does he fulfill his obligation in mishloach manot? Now tshuva, yir'ed de'ein yotzim bahen, that you're not yotze mishloach manot, de'nir'ed ta'am de mishloach manot hu kedei shiyeh sheyehei l'chol echad dai v'safik l'kayam ha'su'uda kedina. What's the point of mishloach manot? So that each person should have enough food to eat at their seuda. Alma detama mishum seudei. So the reason why Mordechai told us that we need to have mishloach manot was kind of, I'd say, like an insurance policy to make sure that everyone in the Jewish nation will be able to have a seuda on that night. So, when I was learning this, I took a step back, and I'm like, one second here. Because if the idea of Mishloach Manot is to make sure that every person has a Seuda, then we could open it up here for a second. Then do you guys think that every single person should be giving Mishloach Manot? Do you guys think that every single person should be receiving Mishloach Manot? Think in terms of the economical chain here. So, like, why should a rich person, we know that a rich person is sitting home and they have their lavish Seuda prepared, why should they be receiving Mishloach Manot? And why should a poor person who doesn't necessarily have much at home to have a Seuda, why does he need to give some of that in order to fulfill this extra mitzvah of Mishloach Manot? So, we can look here at the Chasam Sofer, who asks the same question that I just asked, and he says, and he explains, Kach shelo levayesh mi she'enlo. That's in source 6. The Chasam Sofer explains that even if we know that someone has a lot of food and they don't need extra food to be able to make a Seuda, we want to give everyone Mishloach Manot so that we even the playing field and we don't embarrass. It's to avoid embarrassment for all the other people who might not necessarily have enough money for a Seuda. Okay. So now, so the Truma Hadashen, he is our first approach as to what is the point of Mishloach Manot. First approach of the Truma Hadashen is so that we can make sure that every single person will have a Seuda. It's an insurance policy for the Seuda. It's intertwined to our mitzvah of Seuda. Now, let's look at the Manos HaLevi in source 7. Well, it's kind of hard to look at it, so I might do a little bit outside. But the Manos HaLevi is Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz. He's the guy who wrote Lecha Dodi. And he wrote the Manos HaLevi, which is a sefer on Megillas Esther. And he, I'll talk about it outside. And he mentions that the first words out of Haman's mouth when Haman went to approach Ahasuerus to kill the Jews, he says, Yeshna am echad mufuzar umefurad bein ha'amin. He says that within that the Jewish nation, why should we obliterate them? Because they are a nation that is disunified, dispersed, and they're so disconnected from themselves, and they're just dispersed within from all the other nations. So what does Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz say? He says that on Purim, we stick it to Haman. How do we stick it to Haman? By showing that we're giving Mishloach Manot and we're unifying our community, that every single person is going to be giving and getting Mishloach Manot. We're showing camaraderie and we're showing this amazing communal bond, which is the antithesis of what Haman said that we are. So now let's review our two approaches that we have towards why we have Mishloach Manot. And as I'm reviewing these two approaches, try to think of maybe what the point is of having these two different approaches. Is it just, oh, like, nice answers for why I'm giving Mishloach Manot? Or can there maybe be different practical differences between these two approaches? So we had the Truman Hadeshen, which said, why am I giving Mishloach Manot? To make sure that every single person in Am Yisrael can have their Seuda on Purim. And according to the Manos HaLevi, it's what? It's this unifying factor. Every single person in Bnei Yisrael is giving and receiving Mishloach Manot, and it's showing this amazing communal bond, which is connecting all of Am Yisrael to shut down what Haman had told us. What Haman had told Ahasuerus. Okay. So there are several real-world nafkaminas, depending on whether we follow the Truman Hadeshen or the Manot HaLevi. I'm going to offer a little bit of a scenario for a second. Okay, so My husband over there in the back, Shalom, is allergic to chocolate. He can't eat chocolate. He would get really, really sick. I know. But it wasn't a deal breaker because he's awesome. Okay. Now let's say my cousin Mutzi over here, who knew Shalom but didn't know that he was allergic to chocolate, decided to give his amazing chocolate souffle that his wife Mati makes to give Shalom at that chocolate souffle as a part of his Mishloach Manot. Great. Like, you think you're giving it the top of the top, really, really gourmet stuff right there. But Shalom can't eat it. Like, he really can't. Is Mati Yotze in the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot? I don't want to try to guess. It's fine.
According to Ramah, yes. So the same thing about the diet, right? He gave somebody something really fattening and they didn't want it.
Okay, good. Good.
Since he can't eat it, it's not a suda for him.
Since he can't, good. But we're unifying, so maybe, good. So maybe, according, I'm sorry, what are your names?
Mark and Sarah.
Mark and Sarah. Good. So you guys are on the two flip sides of the coin here. So according to the true... No, it's really good. You're coming together to give us our answers. So if we look at the Truman Hadeshen, who says the Mishloach Manot are an enabler for the Seuda. So Shalom cannot have that chocolate at his seuda, and therefore, if we are answering like the Truman Hadeshen, then no, Mati was not yotze in his Mishloach Manot to Shalom. But if we're looking at the Manot Halevi, then we didn't even see the chocolate. He wrapped it up in this really beautiful box with a nice ribbon and all the, and he wrote a really beautiful poem. And that really does show the camaraderie that we were. Yeah. Good. So that is one really cool practical difference between the Manos Halevi and the Truman Hadeshen. We try to give them something that they're allergic to. Now, let's look at the Ksav Sofer to see our second really cool practical difference between the Truman Hadeshen and the Manos Halevi. Now, the Ksav Sofer was the son of the Chasam Sofer, Rav Avram Shmuel ben Yamin Sofer. He lived from 1815 to 1871. Okay, maybe I won't read it inside. But basically, let's look at this next scenario. I'm so sorry, what were your names? John.
Sarah and Mark.
Okay. Sarah and Mark. Oh, but you guys are in the same family.
American.
Oh. Okay. So, never mind. Okay. So, Rebbetzin Penner over here goes to Sarah and Mark's house, and Rebbetzin Penner also, just like Mutzi, has this really beautiful box with a really nice ribbon, and she even made a really nice poem. But the problem is that she clicked print to print out all her poems before she wrote the family name. And she thought that she would write Penner, love the Penner family, on all the sheets, but on that box, she forgot to write her name. Now she knocks on Sarah and Mark's door. She knocks and knocks, but they already left their seuda out of town, and they're not home. And so she leaves. She leaves her Mishloach Manot on their front porch. Is Rebbetzin Penner yotzit in Mishloach Manot?
She provided a meal, but there was no achdus because we don't know who it's from.
She provided a meal, so who would that go like?
You're also not eating the meal. You've already left.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay, so never mind. They're around the corner delivering to someone else. They're just not home.
So according to the Truman Hadeshen, she'd be outside.
Good. And maybe we could even argue that according to the Truman Hadeshen, not only is she yotzei, but we all know about the different levels of tzedakah, right? And how, and the fact that giving to aniyim anonymously, good, that giving to aniyim anonymously can be even more mishubach. So, shkayach. But that's only according to the Truman Hadeshen. Now, when you guys get home and you see this amazing, yeah?
So Shalom
So Shalach Manos is considered a form of Tzedakah in this case?
So Shalach Manos is considered a form of according to the Truma. That's amazing. No, thank you. We're going to take a step back. Shalach Manos was enacted according to the Truma Sadashen in order to enable us to have a suit, in order to make sure that every single person in the Jewish nation will be having a suuda, no matter what their background.
I'll say without her name, was it a higher form?
So we can argue that. We can argue, yeah. That was not her name. It was a higher form. But then we have the Manos Halevi, who says that Mishloach Manos is to show camaraderie. Now, when you guys come home and you see the really beautiful box and you read the super witty poem, obviously, that she came up with, are you feeling that camaraderie with the rest of the Jews? I don't know, maybe, but maybe not, because you don't know that it's from her. Right. Okay, maybe. From the Jews.
Not
for me,
I love the
news. I'm sorry. Good. So, I would say that for the Manos Halevi, we would want it to be, the whole point is Matano Lev Yonim Ish Lerei Ehu. You want it, so yeah, maybe this anonymous thing, we want to feel really connected to everyone, but I would argue, maybe for that, according to the Manos Halevi, it doesn't show camaraderie, necessarily, because we're not having this Ish L'Rei Ehu bond. Good. Now, a third nafka mina can be looked at in how we understand Source 9, and how we understand and read this Gemara in Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. So let's read that. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, Shadarle L'Rabbi Oshia, Atama De'igla Tlata V'Garva De'chamra. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia gave Rabbi Oshia an inferior piece of meat and wine. Shalachle, and Rabbi Oshia says back to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is a grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and let's bear in mind, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia was a rich man, and Rabbi Oshia, we're going to see based on how he responds, he was a poorer man. So Shalachle, and what does he say to Rabbi Yehuda? He says, Kayamt banu Rabbeinu, that you were Mekayim when you sent me this meat and this wine. You were Mekayim both the mitzvah of Mishloach Mano Ish L'Re'ehu and Matanos La'Avionim. Very nice. Very nice. But now, let us look. And the Riva has a very, very fascinating, different girsa of this same Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who let's remember was rich. Let's start in the second line towards the end. The Ritva explains his girsa. Aval bechulhu nischai garsinan kayamta banu rabbeinu matano leavionim. That according to the Ritva, when Rabbi Oshia is responding to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia's nice gift, he says that you were just Mekayim Matana Levionim. No mention at all of Shalach Manos. Okay. And why does he say that? It says, Perish Shalohai Tayakra Hatashura Be'enav, Ve'amar She'ena Matana La'adam Kamahu, Ve'lo Yatza Yedei Chova Mishalach Manot Ishlerayahu. That why? Why wasn't Rabbi Yehuda Nesia able to fulfill this obligation when he gave this kind of inferior piece of meat and wine to Rabbi Oshia? That it wasn't important enough to give to Rabbi Oshia. He should have put a little bit more thought and maybe spent a little bit more of his efforts on giving him a Mishloach Mano. And therefore, he was not Mekayim the mitzvah. Interesting. Now, in a Gemara in Yerushalmi, in Megillah, we're given the end of this story. What happens after Rabbi Oshia, maybe according to the Ritva, said, sorry, you were only Mekayim Matan Lev Yonim, great, check one of the mitzvot that you had to do today off the list, but he still didn't fulfill his obligation to give Shalach Manos. So what do we say here? over there in that Gemara, in the Gemara in Yerushalmi, it says that then Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya goes back and he gets the nicer cut of the meat and the bigger piece of meat and gives it to Rabbi Oshia, and Rabbi Oshia answers back, Kayam Tabanu, that you were Mekayim, Mishloach Manot Ishlarei, who now, that you gave that nicer piece of meat. Okay, we have a bunch of things going around here. We have the Gemara, the Gemara in Source 9 that we read, that said that when Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya gave the inferior piece of meat and wine to Rabbi Oshia, Rabbi Oshia said, nice, you just checked two things off the list. Matanos Labionim and Shalach Manos. The Ripa says, that's not how my Gemara explains that story. My Gemara just says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya fulfilled Matanot Labionim. So then, the Yerushalmi says that Matanos Labionim is only fulfilled because at the end of the story when Rabbi Oshia received the nicer piece of meat. So Rabbi Yitzchak Mirsky writes these amazing Sfarim Hagyone Halacha. He's from Israel. And he looks at these things as a really cool nafkamina between our Truman Hadeshen Su'uda approach and our Manos Halivi camaraderie approach. What does he say? He says that the Truman Hadeshen was probably coming out of the Bavli. Not necessarily coming out, but the Truman Hadeshen was Mekavin the same way that the Bavli was. That doesn't matter that are you able to have a su'uda from a piece of meat that maybe isn't as expensive in the supermarket? Totally. That if I go to the store and I look at the shelf of all those different Hamantaschen, and I wind up getting the crushed one, the crushed Hamantaschen that's been that's like on the side, and it's yashan, and it's like the gross kind that no one wants. Is that still? I just feel like that's always like the determinant. Okay, then you're not then according to the Truman Hadeshen, it's still food. You could still have a su'uda. You're yotzei. And that's the response in the Bavli as well. But now the Ritva's girsa of that same Gemara, and the way that the Yerushalmi finishes off our story, saying that we need the nicer piece of meat, and that maybe if one of us were to go and give our friend that we hold so dearly to us the leftovers, the crushed, the food that I don't care about and clearly doesn't show that I really want to show my love for you and for all of Am Yisrael, then maybe that is not being Mekayim, the mitzvah Matanot Labionim, according to the Manos Halevi. Maybe not. So that's how the Hagione Halacha explains it. Now, let us look at the Chai Adam, and he explains a little bit of what I was saying. He basically says that maybe according to the Manos Halevi, there's kind of like a sliding scale on how to be Mekayim the Mitzvah. Mash Shezet Mizeh, the very last line, I'm sorry, I'm just going to read the very last line there. Mash Mizeh She'im Shaleach Davar Pacho La'ashir Eino Yotzei Bazeh Mishum Mishloach Manu. That maybe if there's a man with very high stature, or there's a richer man, that maybe then you do need to put a little bit more effort into the Matanot Lavionim in order to fulfill that obligation. And I've heard that Rav Tendler, he used to tell people that they really had to really put effort into their Mishloach Manot when they were going to bring it to him, and like he would tell people not to send him trash. So that's really like it's a part of it. Good. Good. Amazing. Okay. So now, okay. Let us look at a very enigmatic Gemara in Megillah that will help us to maybe kind of see how we can approach Mishloach Manot. Abaye bar Avin, it starts on page 2, but then the text is on 3. Abaye bar Avin, v'Rabbi Chanina bar Avin. So these are two bar Avin. These guys are brothers. Mechalfe su'uda tayhu lahadadei. They would swap su'udas with each other. What does that mean? That maybe rings a bell from the Shulchan Aruch, right? That we read in the beginning. That if someone doesn't have enough money, they can switch. Now let's look how the Rambam sees this. Let's look at the last two words of the second to last line. If someone does not have enough money for Su'uda and for Mishloach Mano, he just can't afford to have both. Machlif im chaveiro, zeh shalech lezeh su'udato, vezeh shalech lezeh su'udato. What does he do? He flips su'udas with his friend. I give you my su'uda, and you give me your su'uda, thereby being mekayim, the mitzvah of both su'uda, the mitzvah su'uda and mishloach mano. Kedei lekayim mishloach mano ish l'reihu. Great. But now, Rashi approaches this Gemara of the Bar Avin brothers quite differently. It's a little bit shocking. How does he interpret this machlife suda taihu? Ze ochal im ze bepurim shel shana zu ubashmiya suad chaveiro imo. What happens? We can't afford mashloach manot and suda. This year you eat at me, and next year I'll eat at you. That's what the Bar Avin brothers would do. Now, the Beis Yosef, like all of us, basically falls off his chair. What is this? Mishloach Manos isn't like this thing that you can like do one year and then say like, oh, but I did it that year, so you do it this year. It's every single year you need to do Mishloach Manos. It's not like, oh, I heard Megillah last year, so and you hear Megillah for me this. No, it's. You know, each Purim to itself. So what does he say? What does he ask? So he's the one who asks this crazy question. How is that going to help my chiyuv in Mishloach Manu? We can read his question over here. The third to last line, the fifth to last word, v'kasha li al devar rav d'im kein lo hayu mekayimim mishloach manot ish l'reihu. That Rashi's words just don't make sense to me at all, because if Rashi is right, then how are they being mekayim the mitzvah of shalach manos? Now the Lecha Mishnah kind of gives like what I would call the yeshiva bacher way to answer this question. What does that mean? He gives like the technical approach. Let's look at the second line, the last three words. Bekasha al dvar rav de'im kein lo haya mekayim mitzvah mishloach manot ela achad mehem shaya notin su'uda tola chaveiro aval chaveiro lo haya mekayim. So If Rashi's words are true, then how can we be fulfilling our obligation of Shalach Manos? Because one of them is giving Su'uda, but the other one isn't doing anything this year. Good. V'kenik shemarik, good. V'linira deteret dehayu osin kach haya noten su'uda tol chaveiro b'matana b'shana zu. V'achar shehaya shelo az chaveiro k'shehaya noten lo me'ota su'uda. Behayaso edimo nimtsashe gamhu notin lo kevan shekavar haytaknu ya lo b'matana v'hare natan mehani tun lo. So we're going to get very technical here. We're both going to eat at the same su'uda. Now for the first course, I'm going to be makne. I am going to give you as a matana the su'uda. Right now, the su'uda belongs to you. We're doing a technical halachic matana, kinyan, and the su'uda belongs to you. And now, for the second course, let's say, you are going to be makna the whole su'uda back to me. And now, according to halacha, the su'uda belongs to me. Therefore, and I am, and when the suda belongs to me, I'm doing mishloach manot, basically, to you. And during the part of the meal when it belonged to you, you're doing mishloach manot to me. Good. Great way to answer, if you're into that. Now let's look at 18. And the 18, and number 18 is the Bach, and he does something very, very interesting that's rarely done, and it's kind of beyond my capacity to go into. The Bach basically takes the Manos Halevis, what we usually don't do is we don't really explain mitzvot and give reasons for mitzvot based on the reason why we do the mitzvot. Okay, what am I talking about? What was the Manos Halevi's approach to Mishloach Manot? What's the point of Shalach Manos? Remember the Haman Pasuk? What are we trying to do? Good. We're trying to unify all of Bnei Yisrael, right? We're trying to stick it to Haman. We're trying to shut down the fact that we're all spread out. So even though maybe when we're doing this year's Seudah's at my house, next year's Seudah's at your house, maybe we're not actually checking off the list of what Mishloach Manot is officially supposed to look like, according to the Bach, there's nothing more beautiful than two brothers eating together, and there's nothing that looks more uniting and that looks like more of this wonderful communal bond. So, it's basically this beautiful, mushy approach to what Mishloach Manot should look like. Mm-hmm. So, he's basically what I would call the Manon Halevi on steroids. That he basically says that the reason why we can do Mishloach Manot 1 year at my house, Mishloach Manot 1 year at your house, Suda 1 year at my house, Suda 1 year at your house, and thereby fulfilling our obligation of Shalach Manos, we can say that works because it is this approach of the Manos Halevi of really bringing us together. And now, I'm sorry. Okay, so now let's try to kind of look at like why maybe this whole approach of really uniting all of Am Yisrael is helping fulfill this goal of Mordechai and let's try to figure out why Mordechai really wanted us to give Shalach Manos. Let's go to, I'm going to give like a little shout out to Amalek because that is what this year is going to be about. Let's go to right before Amalek came for the first time to attack Bnei Yisrael in Parshas Beshalach. Who were the leaders of the time? Who were the people in command, the main characters of our story at that time? Sorry? Moshe, Aaron, Yoshua, good. So Yoshua, you're like ahead of the curve. Yoshua indeed was up there, but up until then, we hadn't really heard from Yoshua. Up until then, Moshe and Aaron were the dynamic duo. They had done everything. They'd worked together to get Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, and they were the really cool people. Now, I'm sorry that I don't have these psukim for you, but if we look at the psukim, In Parshas Beshalach of Amalek coming to attack Bnei Yisrael and the war, we see Yehoshua's name come up many times. That Yehoshua is the partner of Moshe in this story. Yehoshua is the one to sit with Moshe and to help Bnei Yisrael get through the war. Now, why? Why? Now let's also look. Let's try to figure out maybe why. Let's maybe look at their families. What family did Moshe come from? What Shevet was Moshe from? Great. And which of our Imahos was Levi from? Levi was from Leah. Great. And we know that Aaron was from the same family. Good. So we didn't necessarily, and they were already like really close brothers. Then we had Yehoshua, who was from Shevet Binyamin, who was the son of Rachel. We all know that Leah and Rachel were not the closest of friends, and it was not so apparent that their children would be so unified. So maybe to answer our question of where did Yehoshua come from? Like Moshe and Aaron were really rocking it up. It seems like they could have, you know, Yehoshua was definitely necessary later in our story. But we could argue that Moshe and Aaron totally could have gotten us through the war with Amalek. But no. If we look at this big famous pasuk in Esther, we have Ish Yehudi, Hayah b'Shushan Habira, Ushmo Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kush, Ish Yemini. So we have a famous, the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Yod Bet Amabet asks, why is it who is Mordechai? Is he an Ish Yehudi? Is he from Shevet Yehuda? Or is he an Ish Yemini? Is he from Shevet Binyamin? And what do we answer? That he was a mixed breed. Aviv mi Binyamin, v'ima mi Yehuda. That his father was from Binyamin and his mother was from Yehuda. So that is what the whole nature of our Purim story is. We are shutting down Haman, who said that we're mufuzar, that we're not united. Haman told Achashverosh that we should be obliterated because we're so messed up. We're all over the place. But Mordechai, one of our heroes of the story, he represents the coming together of Bnei Yisrael. He represents Rachel and Leah coming together in one manifestation, as does our this Shabbos when we read Zohar, where our whole melchama, the whole nature of our fight against Amalek is bringing Yehoshua, who is from Rachel, and Moshe, who is from Levi, in order to fight against Amalek. Thank you.